Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'll get back to your phone calls and emails shortly at 866-439-5277. Naysayers go to the head of the line, and we don't get a chance to talk that often with Joel Rosenberg, who's a New York Times bestselling author of so many books, and really, he's like a modern-day Nostradamus because he writes a novel, and then what he writes about in the novel happens in real life. Isn't that right, Joel?
Well, I don't plan it that way. I don't want these things to happen. These are worst-case scenarios, Lars.
Would you mind reminding my audience of your background and why you know your stuff when it comes to writing, in particular, about the United States and the Middle East and now Russia?
Well, I worked in Washington for a quarter of a century. I worked for a number of U.S. and Israeli leaders, including former Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. He was former when I worked for him. He obviously has been Prime Minister now again for many years, 9 years. So I've also worked closely with former CIA directors and military officials. So I try to incorporate that level of realism into my political thrillers. Now, again, I'm not writing novels that I expect to come true, that I want to come true, but they're worst case scenarios that I fear could come true if Western leaders, American leaders, are blindsided by evils that they just don't see. They're looking one direction and they get hit from the blind side. And that's, you and I got to know each other because of my first novel, The Last Jihad, which the first page put you inside the cockpit of a jet plane hijacked by radical Islamic terrorists coming in on a kamikaze attack mission into an American city. I was writing that 9 months before September 11th, 2001. And as you remember, The Last Jihad, the plot went from that kamikaze attack to a fictional American president declaring war on Iraq and removing Saddam Hussein from power. And that was all nearly finished by the morning of 9/11. So, again, that wasn't prophecy. That was extrapolation. That was a war game that went badly because, it was a little too close to what really happened.
Well, and yet that's why I see you as being a guy who knows if all these other things line up this way, you can look forward past that and imagine what a lot of Americans found unimaginable, that particular terrorist attack. Let me ask you about this this new book you've got, The Kremlin Conspiracy, and with that, the poll that you had commissioned to find out what Americans think about the threat that Russia poses.
Sure. Well, let's start with the fiction. The Kremlin Conspiracy just came out on Tuesday. The theory of the novel, the plot, is that a dictator, a tyrant, a czar, if you will, rises in Moscow. And while the new American president has got his eye on North Korea, Iran, and ISIS and so forth, the Russian dictator is plotting a lightning-fast strike on a small NATO country, one of the Baltic states, Estonia, Latvia, or Lithuania, or all three. Now, those are NATO countries, which mean that they are under what's called Article 5 protection. And Article 5 is the mutual defense pact in NATO, where if one country is attacked, every country considers itself attacked, and they all come to the rescue of the one. Well, the Russian dictator is plotting to do this fast strike, 100,000 troops, grab one of these Baltic states in 96 hours and hold it. And the gamble that the Russian leader is taking is that in the end, the American president and NATO will not actually go to war with Russia and risk a nuclear war just to rescue one country that most Americans can't find on a map. It's a big gamble. But if that happened, and if, in real life, if that really happened, if Putin did that and we didn't respond, that's the end of NATO. You can't have a NATO alliance if you don't defend each other. And yet, would we really go to war with Russia over one or two small countries? We should. In principle, these are heroic people that lived under Soviet tyranny. So that's the premise of the novel. And, of course, there's a former Marine, former Secret Service agent, who happens to find himself in Moscow when all hell breaks loose, and he becomes the linchpin of the story.
Well, let me ask you about that, Joel, because as you point out, you worked for Netanyahu, a man I greatly admire, And I kind of wonder about the cigars and the champagne and whether that's really that big a deal, but we can get into that another time if you prefer.
Okay,
but
sure.
Someone, I think, gosh, who was it? There's a young lady who writes for one of the Jerusalem papers, and we've had her on before, Caroline Glick.
Caroline Glick,
And I think she said that there was a point in Israel's history where they said, well, you can't just take the Golan Heights because, you know, Syria will go to war with you. And they did, because it had strategic importance that was, you know, huge for Israel and still is. And that eventually it might be given back. I've heard people say, yeah, eventually it'll probably go back. But for right now, it's providing a buffer and in a very important place. And I think she made the point that at the time they did that, I don't know the history that well. The predictions, well, if you do that, they'll go to war with you. And they Israel did it, and they didn't go to war. I mean, it was just it's I guess it is stalemate at this point. But they've got a hold of the Golan Heights. Is it possible that Russia could pull off something similar, where they just take something and possession is 9/10 of the law, and the United States doesn't have either the spine or sees it as not smart to go to war over something like that?
Well, okay, all right. So you're mixing two different pieces.
Yeah.
Let me try to do a brief thing first.
Sure.
On Israel. Israel never did an aggressive war where it just decided, I'm going to take this territory. What you're referring to is June 1967, where Syria and Egypt and all the Arab countries were threatening vocally to kill every Jew and throw Israel into the sea, and they were massing their forces to attack. Israel decided it couldn't wait to absorb a first strike, so it hit first, catching all the Arabs off guard. And they won. In so doing, they not only won Jerusalem and the Sinai and the West Bank and Gaza, they also won the Golan Heights. So that's the actual short version of that story. And you're right, Syria never did. Well, they did. They attacked again in 1973, actually, and nearly destroyed Israel. So I think the analogy doesn't fit. In this case, what you have in Russia is they keep trying to capture and enslave the countries around them. The Baltic states, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, they lived 70 years under Soviet slavery. And when they were set free at the collapse of the Soviet Union, they built strong democracies, strong free market economies, the religious freedom. And they're terrified right now that the scenario I laid out for you a moment ago, fiction, in the Kremlin conspiracy. They actually have three foreign ministers in Washington, as I speak to you, planning a summit with President Trump for April 3rd to bring the presidents of each of those countries to say, Mr. President, you've got to stand with us. Putin is amassing forces on our border right now, and if he moves again, this is a devastating war in Europe. We've got to build up deterrent forces much stronger, you know, to create a speed bump so high that Putin wouldn't be tempted to come try to grab them in some lightning strike the way I lay out in the novel. But it's a risk, because we're all, even tonight, the president is about to make some major statement on North Korea.
I was going to ask you about that next. Yeah.
But we've got our focus on serious issues. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying the president is focusing on the wrong things, but there are multiple challenges. And Putin gave this incredibly belligerent speech last week, his State of the Union speech. It's the most aggressive and militaristic that he's given in 18 years in office. And he said, we've got new first-strike nuclear weapons. He said that Russia cannot be contained. And he said, the world isn't listening to me. You listen to me now. I am not bluffing. Well, when you say that Russia can't be contained, what does that mean? It means it's planning to expand. This is why the Baltic states are scared. This is why America has to realize.
You know what, Joel? I'm up against the clock, but it's another prophetic novel. I can just see it coming. The Kremlin Conspiracy. It's out now. Its author is Joel Rosenberg, and he's a good friend of the show. Joel, thank you very much. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show.